White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 270.
The eye of the enemy is moving. The end has come.
Every day, Frodo moves closer to Mordor. How do we know Frodo is alive? What does your heart tell you?
Come, Master! Come to Smeagol.
This is your test. Every path you have trod through wilderness, through war, has led to this road.
The enemy will never let Aragorn come to the throne of Gondor.
It is time. Give him the sword of the king.
Become who you were born to be.
The precious sleepy eyes.
He means to murder us! Baba!
I'm not sending him away. Come to me.
The order said that. The pieces are moving.
He is here.
I see in your eyes the same fear that would take the heart of me. A day may come when the courage of man fails. When we forsake our friends and break all bonds of fellowship. But it is not this day.
Whatever happens, stay with me.
This day, we fight!
Have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to you.
We shall see the Shire again.
You gave away your life's grace. I cannot protect you anymore.
We cannot achieve victory through strength of arms.
Not for ourselves.
But we can give Frodo a chance.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and man, we've been doing a lot of shows lately. This is our, I know it's our 270th White Rocket program in general, but it's also White Rocket podcast number 120. So we're already a fifth of the way in our second century, and I'm joined once again by our semi-regular co-host, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard, John.
Thanks, Van. Glad to be here.
Well, we've been averaging doing one Lord of the Rings movie a month lately, and so it was time to go ahead and close out the Lord of the Rings trilogy book/movie with The Return of the King. And I've really been looking forward to this because it's a great book, it's a great movie, it was a great cartoon, which we'll talk about, and very exciting to dig into. it's kind of bittersweet because I've really enjoyed going through these movies, and I hate kind of bringing it into a close tonight, but it's going to be really fun to talk about the second movie of all time to cross the $1 billion mark after, I guess, Titanic and before Avatar. And a humongous financial success, as well as a huge critical success and Oscar winner, which we'll touch on all of that. So what are your thoughts as we head into our last installment?
I mean, as you said, it's been really fun to do this. And honestly, maybe now we can talk about one of my favorite movie of all time. So I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. Well, first things first, for those that have been following along through the first two installments, John and I, and this is one of my favorite parts of all, even though I'm currently losing overall, John and I have been playing Lord of the Rings trivia. And we're doing this by having the Trivial Pursuit Lord of the Rings movie edition, which covers all three movies. And for those that haven't been following along, what I did was I received this as a gift one Christmas years ago, and I never really opened the cards. I opened the board out and everything, but I never really got into the cards because I never could find anybody that wanted to play it with me. And so I guess they all figured that I probably knew more than they did. John is showing that that's not accurate. And so I just grabbed the big chunk of the cards and mailed them sight unseen to John so that we could play it against each other. And in our first, let me pull out the running tally sheet here. When we did Fellowship of the Ring, and again, the cards have no relation to any specific movie. It's just whatever they, whichever card we happen to draw at random. When we played the first time, the first movie we did, John won 10-8. And when we did the second time during the Two Towers show, it was a tie 9-9. This is out of 12 questions. So tonight, there are several potential outcomes. Either I can win by enough to win or tie overall, or we can have another tie, in which case John wins, or John can just beat my butt again. So I am prepared to keep score on our first go-round of six. So let me see. I'm reaching in here and I'm going to hope pull out a really tough, tough, challenging card for you. And I hope you're doing the same. Remember, we're just doing it randomly. Don't go on a fishing expedition for hard questions.
I just pull whatever's on the top.
There you go. All right. So I have mine in hand. Let's see. Whose turn is it to ask the questions first?
I'll ask first.
All right. John is going to ask the questions. And we'll think about them. I'll ask him his questions. We'll think about him. We'll come back after everybody's had a chance to think about it, and we'll do the answers. So fire away.
All right. First question. Which member of the Broken Fellowship finds the Elven Brooch as they track the Uruk-hai?
Oh, okay. Good.
All right. Next question. Which hobbit does Smeagol complain is always watching him? And then, who are the only two members of the Fellowship who don't appear to smoke pipes? That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good one, yeah.
All right. And then, who urges the Fellowship at the lake camp to enter Mordor from the north? Who urges the Fellowship at the lake camp to enter Mordor from the north?
Okay.
And all right. And then, what siege devices are called Pendraith in Elvish? Pendraith in Elvish. And then what movie of the trilogy has a digital effects? What movie of the trilogy has digital effects that took over 4 million hours to create?
Oh, wow. That I did not know, but okay, cool. Wow. Okay, I've got educated guesses about most of those, but I can see that I'm going to probably be lucky to come out of that with four or five at the most correct. That's interesting. All right, here come your six. Let's see what we got for John. Oh, let's see. Please don't be which member of the Fellowship has blonde hair and pointy ears. All right, let's see. Number one, What direction does Treebeard like traveling in? Come on. Traveling in, because, quote, it feels like going downhill. Okay. This is how you know I didn't cheat. This is how you know I didn't cheat. Okay. Number two. Who peers over the balcony of Orthanc with Saruman after the flooding of Isengard? Sweet Lord in heaven. Valar, have mercy. Number three. Where is the ring when a frantic Bilbo searches for it at Bag End? On the mantelpiece, in an envelope, or in his vest pocket? They didn't need to give you choices on that one, dang.
Sure they did.
Oh, they didn't. No, they didn't. Yeah, I can see bitter defeat in my future. Number four. What place does Frodo know Gollum has been before? Rohan, Mordor, or the Shire? What place does Frodo know that Gollum has been before? Number five. What city does Theoden order to be emptied before the advance of Saruman? What city does he order to be emptied, Theoden, before the advance of Saruman? And finally, number six. Which Fellowship actor broke a toe on the set while kicking an orc helmet? And John, I've just got to tell you, I would have gotten all six of those correct. So,
I'm not sure I will.
Dang. That's, wow. Okay. Well, fair enough. Can't complain. So, shall we move forward, or do you want to do the answers now? Go ahead.
Either way.
I guess we'll go ahead and put it behind us. So everybody's had a chance to think about them. And some of these, they don't have to think long. So go ahead and ask me mine again, and I'll give you the answers on as many as I can.
All right, first question. Which member of the Broken Fellowship finds the Elven Brooch as they track the Uruk-hai?
Pretty sure that's Aragorn.
Correct.
Thank goodness. That's one of those that you're like, you know, you're so sure that you might actually miss it because you think you know.
That's right. Which hobbit does Sméagol complain is always watching him?
Probably the fat hobbit, Sam.
That is correct.
All right.
Two for two. Who are the only two members of the Fellowship who don't appear to smoke pipes?
Yeah, that is a great question, and I'm just going through. Now, we know that Gandalf smokes. We know that Aragorn smokes. We certainly know that Merry and Pippin smoke everything in their path. We know that Gimli smokes. That's five down. That leaves Boromir, Frodo, Sam, and Legolas. Now, I don't remember seeing any of those four smoke. Now, repeat the question to make sure I'm understanding it correctly.
Which are the only two members of the Fellowship who don't appear to smoke pipes?
I'm just going to say that all hobbits smoke. I'm going to go Boromir and Legolas.
You are correct.
I mean, we never see Sam and Frodo smoke, do we?
I think they at one point they have pipes, you know, or they talk. I think maybe Frodo smokes it, maybe, but
okay.
In one scene early, I can't remember.
There's no
party or somewhere around there.
There's no Middle Earth Heart Association to get onto him about it, so they just all do it. All right. Whew, I feel good about that one.
All right. You're not going to live to Gandalf's age smoking. I'm just throwing that out there. All right. Who urges the Fellowship at the Lake Camp to enter Middle Earth? To enter Mordor from the north.
I've got to say, because you mentioned Gandalf smoking, this is something I wanted to mention, and I know I was going to forget, but you reminded me just now, and I'm glad, so I'm going to say it before I forget. Did you notice that when Gandalf smokes his pipe in Minas Tirith, it's choking him? It's like he can't smoke. I think that when he came back as the White Rider, Gandalf the White, he's biologically different, and he's not used to smoking anymore.
I just think they have really bad weed there.
You don't want any of that Minas Tirith weed.
You want some of that Hobbiton stuff.
You want the Longbottom leaf.
South Farthing.
The South Longbottom leaf from the South Farthing, baby. Minas Tirith leaf. It's that funky stuff. Cheech and Chong wouldn't smoke Minas Tirith leaf. Ugh.
There's a war on their supply shortages. Yeah. You can't get the
well,
good stuff.
Well, so. You see what the white tower, what the white tree looks like. Just imagine what the what the pipeweed fields look like. I guess at the very end, we should have seen a scene where the white tree is blooming, and then you cut to the little pipeweed field of Minas Tirith, and it's all blooming, and then they're like, woo! They're all celebrating the, oh, look, the white tree. Oh, the pipeweed! Woo! All right, I'm sorry. I just thought about him. They make a great production out of Gandalf not being able to smoke a pipe, and I just had a feeling that it's because he's come back and he's in a different body basically now and he can't smoke anymore. I thought that was funny. All right, so now that that's out of the way, what was the question? I'm sorry.
All right, question was, who urges the Fellowship at the Lake Camp to enter Mordor from the north?
The Lake Camp. There's a Lake Camp?
When they say the Lake Camp, I think they mean before the Fellowship breaks up on the edge of the big lake and below the falls, kind of with the
above the falls.
That's the lake I think they're talking about. I don't think they're talking about the one outside of
Moria.
Moria. I don't think that's the lake.
Yeah,
but
that's
I could be wrong.
That's the only two lakes I remember, and the lake out at Gondor at the that would be like where what that would be where the what you call it the two statues the yes. Argonath the lake at the Argonath. I guess that's a lake with a waterfall. Okay, so they say urge them to enter from the north, which I guess would be the Morannon, the Black Gate, instead of going up the stairs. So you're down to eight. It's not going to be any hobbits. So it's either going to be Aragorn or Boromir. I'm going to say Boromir.
Incorrect. Aragorn.
Oh, dang it. I was close.
You were right there.
All right. Three and one.
All right. What siege devices are called Pendraith in Elvish?
Yeah. Well... The only siege devices I know of are there's the orcs have catapults. Minas Tirith has those. I can't think of the name of them that swing around like big slings on arms. And then there's the towers, and then there's the battering ram. So
the thing with the sling for an arm is like a trebuchet.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Is trebuchet. Oh, Penry. I'm going to say the siege towers.
You are incorrect. It is ladders. That's a terrible question.
Oh, jeez.
Say siege.
Even, I guess that would be it.
Device and say ladders.
It's a ladder. You know, John, seriously, John, I've got a wasp nest on the eaves of my roof. And when I go up there tomorrow, I'm going to put out a siege device to get up on the roof of my house and spray it.
No, you're going to use your Pendraith.
Exactly, a siege device, the Pendraith, right, yeah. The frickin' ladder. Right, okay. That was number five. One more.
The last one is, which movie of the trilogy has digital effects that took over 4 million hours to create?
It's got to be Return of the King, surely.
Two Towers.
Really?
That's what it says. Before I flipped it over, I was sure it was Return of the King.
I'm like, okay, so it would have been 5 million hours for Return of the King then. It was actually saying this wasn't very long, see? That was the trick. It's saying it's not 4 million hours. That's nothing. That's how long it took to render the effects for Babylon 5. All right, let's do yours. I got three right, so go ahead and get your six here.
I don't think so.
Man.
I don't know all these.
All right, hopefully you're going to have to get shut out on the second time we do this at the end, or else I'm done. All right, number one, what direction does Treebeard like traveling in? Because it feels like going downhill.
South?
South, yes. Ding, 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 ding. Who peers over the balcony of Orthanc with Saruman after the flooding of Isengard?
Grima Wormtongue.
Yeah, Grima Wormtongue. I'm not even looking at the answers. I'm just, yes, that's correct. Number three, where's the ring when a frantic Bilbo searches for it at Bag End? On the mantelpiece, in an envelope, or in his vest pocket?
In his pocket?
It is in his pocket. Ding, 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 ding. Hold on. Okay. Number four, what place does Frodo know Gollum has been before? Rohan, Mordor, or the Shire?
Mordor.
Yep, not even looking. You've been there before. Number five, what city does Theoden King order to be emptied? By order of the king, this city must be emptied before the advance of Saruman.
The stupid capital of Rohan.
Yes, I'll give you that.
The golden... No, it's not the name of it. The Golden Horn...
You got it. It's the capital city of Rohan. That's right. I don't
know. But I don't know the name of it.
You'll think of it. There's like two places in all of Rohan.
I know. Helm's Deep is the other one.
Helm's Deep and this one, yes.
I can't remember it. Oh, crap.
I'll give you 5 seconds. Edoras.
See, that guy, I knew there was like an E in it. All right, keep Edoras.
There is the Golden Hall of Meduseld. There dwells Theoden, whose mind is overthrown. Okay, and the last one. Which Fellowship actor broke a toe on the set while kicking an orc helmet?
You have to say the actor's name.
Yes.
John Rhys-Davies.
Oh, but no. No, I'm sorry. It's, here, I'll give you a hint. They find the bodies of the orcs have been burned, and one actor goes, ah, and kicks the helmet.
That was Aragorn.
Yeah. Viggo.
Viggo Mortensen.
So you still won that round, 4-3, and we've got one more round left to go, and then we will be sadly done. Okay. Well, that was cool. So let's get back to the book and the movie. Let me get back on my notes here. Yeah. Oh, the first thing I want to mention is that we haven't really talked about it before now. We've talked about the books. We've talked about the movies. But there have been animated versions of Lord of the Rings. I just want to quickly touch on them because that was where I first was exposed to Lord of the Rings before I even knew about the books. I had seen the animated The Hobbit when I was little. You saw that too, right, at some point when you were a kid?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the Rankin Bass, very good cartoon version of The Hobbit, I thought. And after that, there was nothing for a couple of years. And then Ralph Bakshi did Lord of the Rings as a rotoscoped, completely different animated type movie. And rotoscoping is when they film live actors and then trace the animation over it. A famous example would be the opening credits of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that for The Lord of the Rings animated for Ralph Bakshi. And it was not terribly successful. And it only covered about the first half of the story. In fact, it's been so many years since I even tried to watch it. It had some good things about it and it had some bad things. One of the things about it is that rotoscoping just looks creepy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks just enough real that because it's animated, it's weird. You know, it's either like use actors or use animation. But when you mix the two, and I don't mean mix the two like Pete's Dragon, the original, or or Space Jam. I don't mean mix them like that. I mean everything you see is animated, but they animate it over the film so that the animation is moving like a film live action would, and it just doesn't come across at all. It looks creepy. So that wasn't well received, but they had filmed basically the first two books. And so then Rankin Bass came back in, I guess, 1980 or so, and they did the a sequel to The Hobbit where they just skipped everything back she had done and called it The Return of the King. And they basically started it with Sam trying to rescue Frodo at Cirith Ungol. Have you seen that version?
I think so, yes.
It was pretty good. They used Bilbo on his way to the Grey Havens with Frodo and everybody as kind of a framing device where Frodo is telling him what happened to the ring. And they explain, you know, well, we were here, and then they kind of use that. And it's got some really great stuff. It's really worth seeing. If you haven't ever seen it, it's totally worth checking out. I'd skip the Bakshi one, but the Rankin Bass ones are pretty cool. Any thoughts about those?
And it's got the music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what's our favorite song in Return of the King animated?
Well, there's the scene where Frodo and Sam dress as orcs and get conscripted into the orc army,
yes,
to march on the road. And so there's a song in the animated version called "Where There's a Whip, There's a Way."
Where there's a whip, there's a way. Where there's a whip, there's a way. We don't wanna go to war today. Where there's a whip, there's a way. Okay, I had to do that. Thanks.
So there's some kind of like, yeah, there's some kind of 70s like anti-Vietnam, we don't want to go to war today stuff in there with the orcs kind of. But then also, you know, this kind of marching militaristic song too. So it's very interesting, entertaining version.
At one point they call Gollum Charlie, maybe. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, they do a different version of The Road Goes Ever On, which is really nice,
yes,
too, which is pretty cool. So it's, they alter the lyrics slightly, but the one in the movie is the actual Peter Jackson movie is more accurate. But it still sounds pretty neat. Okay, well, I just want to mention those. Those are around on DVD and video if you can locate them. They're pretty fun. They're actually worth. In fact, I would argue that The Return of the King animated in some ways is more accurate than the movie. Because it's got, it doesn't go all into, I mean, a lot of the stuff that Peter Jackson does, I've thought a lot about this, right? Mira and I just watched Return of the King last week I watched it for the 50th time. And I was just going through noticing, and we're going to talk about book versus movie, but I'll just say up front, and we'll kind of come back to it. A lot of the stuff that Peter Jackson did and with the script and with how he did it, how he directed it and everything, it's stuff that makes for a – I think we've talked about this before, right? It's stuff that makes for a better contemporary movie. So if you haven't read the books and you know nothing about Lord of the Rings, you'll watch those Peter Jackson movies and you'll have a complete movie experience because everything more or less is logical and tied together and makes sense. But in order to do that, he had to kind of invent some stuff, and he had to change some stuff so that it all fit together as a cohesive story, as opposed to, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien writing it in his study and mailing off chapters to Christopher in the mail every couple of months, you know, just kind of writing it as top of his head, you know. So it what the movies gain in logical coherence and explanation, they kind of lose in a little bit of the charm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll
talk exactly what you're saying.
All right. We'll come back to that coming up. But so overall, what do you think about Return of the King? You say it's one of your favorite movies?
Oh, I think it is my favorite movie. Period. Like it's my single favorite movie.
Wow.
And I can say like the scene from, you know, there's about 20 minutes in the middle of the movie in the Battle of Pelennor Fields is my favorite scene in any movie. You know, from the time the Gandalf is battling you know, the Witch King, that moment until kind of the end of the Battle of Ponor Fields is my favorite scene in any movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Return of the King usually lurks somewhere in my top five. My top five changes every few months. You and I have done a show about this a couple of years ago. One of these days, once we've decided we've changed enough, we can go back and do a new installment. But my top five usually involve Star Wars, Fellowship of the Ring, Return of the King, Master and Commander, 13th Warrior. Those are usually floating around Casablanca. You know, those are in my top five, six, whatever. And it's usually somewhere between two and three. I don't think it's ever gotten much lower. Oh, Avengers is in there. It's just a lot of good movies that I have in the top echelons, but it's usually right up there with those. So when it was coming out, before it came out, and then when you went to see it, what were you thinking, what were you expecting, and how did it meet your expectations?
Well, again, we had, you know, before this one came out, we had the first two to rely on, and so, you know, we were set. I mean,
the bar was raised. The bar was high.
The expectations were high.
And yet, it did it.
It did it. He pulled it off.
That's I think, the most amazing thing of all, is that those first two movies came out, and that bar was so high. Because, I mean, remember, when Fellowship of the Ring came out, you were still in an age where, more often than not, movies, quote-unquote, ruined books rather than complimenting them, you know? And when Fellowship of the Ring came out, as my positive reaction to it was partially that it was so great and partially surprise. Because
yes.
I thought, I love this book too much for the movie to be this good. It just doesn't work that way.
The scale of these books made you think there's no way they can pull this off and make it look good.
Right. Yeah,
without cutting huge elements or doing it, you know, in a cheesy, half-handed way. And they never did that.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. We're getting audio. You getting some echo?
No.
I get a little echo. Okay, it's gone. Okay. Skype does weird stuff. I won't edit this out because everybody listening knows that we use Skype, and Skype does weird stuff, and what can you do? All right. I've been waiting to tell this story because, like I said, when I saw The Fellowship of the Ring, I took the book. And we got there a couple hours early and sitting in the front, the middle center and all that. It was great. Two Towers, I told the story about going to Washington, D.C. and starting the line and sitting there with a little sign for like 4 hours or whatever, which is funny. But for Return of the King, man, this one blew it all out because there was a thing called Trilogy Tuesday. Did you know about that at the time or what?
I did, but I wasn't able to do it, so
okay.
It didn't matter. So.
Well, here's what happened. I was living in Atlanta. My girlfriend at the time was living in Washington, D.C. About 10 theaters around the country had the opportunity to show on the Tuesday before the movie came out, right? So this is earlier in the week than any movie would be out. They were going to show the extended version of Fellowship of the Ring in the theater, a short intermission, the extended version of Two Towers in the theater, a short intermission, and then Return of the King. And everybody was advertising it. It was like 10 theaters. It was these big theaters around the country. They were specifically chosen because they had the Lucas THX audio super duper system, you know, and a lot of seating. And so what happened was, every theater that was showing it, pretty much, you bought one ticket for an exorbitant amount of money, and you got to see all three movies. And Lord of the Ring, it's like Fellowship started at like 11 in the morning, Two Towers started at like 3, and then Return of the King started at like 7:30, okay, at night. And so I went on the Washington, D.C. I was just going to fly up to Washington, pick up my girlfriend, go to the theater. So I got on the movie theater website for the Washington showing. And when it went up, you know how it goes where you click, and it's busy, busy, busy. And I finally got in and I got it. And I sat back and relaxed. And then like an hour later, I looked, and it was for Fellowship of the Ring. they sold them individually. You had to go in and buy all three separately. And I was furious. I called the theater and they said, no, I'm sorry, we're completely sold out. There's no ticket to give you. And I said, holy crap. So then I thought, forget you, Washington, D.C. There's Baltimore. And so I went on eBay, and there were people who got the tickets at Baltimore. And I don't even know what the face value was. I couldn't tell you what the face value was. I think it was like $75. And there were people that were selling them on eBay for like $200. And I said, all right, I'll buy two for like $200 or $250. And I kept losing auctions. I kept losing at the last minute. Somebody would come in and bid snipe me at the last second every time. And I lost like six auctions in a row. And by that time, it was up to like $500 for the two tickets. And I was so angry, it had become a personal thing. And see, back then I used to teach part-time at two colleges, and one of the colleges would just give me a check for $850 every month or so, or every whenever, for teaching this class. And so I said, I'm just going to spend one of those checks and get the dang tickets. So I went on to the next one that came up for Baltimore, and I bid $850 for those two tickets. And I won it for $680. I paid $680 for two tickets to Trilogy Tuesday to see three movies, two of which I already owned on DVD at the time. Think about that, John. And we go up. We get in line at 2 o'clock in the morning in Baltimore. It's freezing cold. We're in line 2 o'clock in the morning for a movie that starts at 11 in the morning. And guess what place in line we were?
I don't know, 50th?
30th. We were not anywhere near first. And there were people in line with us that had gotten their tickets from a radio station for free. There was a TV station interviewer going down the line asking people, like, stories. And I'm like, if they come to me, do I tell them or not? I don't know if I want to share this story now. But, you know, my friend Bobby Polite has been on the show a few times. He said, you know what? Don't worry about it. He said, you'll have more fun doing that than if you went to Disney World for one day. And I said, you know, you're absolutely right. So I've never let it bother me a bit, because we got to do it. And we wouldn't have gotten to do it if I hadn't done it that way. I mean, we could have flown up there and just gotten in line with no tickets, but there's no guarantee anybody would have sold us their tickets, you know? They could have all been ravenous Lord of the Rings fans.
That's right.
So it worked out, you know. Anyway, so that was kind of how we went in, and I was very excited. And I'll put it this way. This movie did not live up quite to my expectations. There's a whole lot of extraneous stuff in it that kind of put me off. It's all stuff that, as I've watched it over and over again, I know why it's there. It's there for the viewer that doesn't know the story. But it put me off. Like they build up the big, scary-looking orc that's the general on the Pelennor battlefield. They build him up as this big villain, and I could just do without him. He just annoyed me. But it's stuff like that. You needed another villain to fight, and he's there, and that's all well and good. Well, let's talk about the extended versus the regular edition. This, to me, is the one that, you know, we said it before, Fellowship of the Ring, the bonuses were just some nice little extras. You didn't need them, really. Two Towers, the movie literally made no sense without the additions. They weren't big, fantastic scenes for the most part, but they were things that made it make a little more sense. How would you describe what they added in for Return of the King, which is like another hour, basically?
I mean, it was an hour of real meat content. I mean, it wasn't a lot of fluffy stuff, I didn't think. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, you get the whole Saruman scene that wasn't even in the theatrical version. That's critical. Yes. You get the whole Witch King versus Gandalf scene. If you're going to cut something out of this movie, my lord, you cut out the Gandalf versus the Witch King confrontation? Wow. Did the Witch King shatter his staff in the book? I don't remember that.
I don't think so, but I could be wrong.
I don't think so either. They also left out the cock crowing, which kind of annoyed me, because in the cartoon they have that. That's one of the things I like about the cartoon, is they, the Battle of Pelennor Fields in the cartoon is just exactly like the book, and it's great. In the movie, they changed a few things, like he hears the horns blowing. But see, the significance of the cock crowing was that the sun had come out, making making the cock crow. And the fact that the sun had come out meant that the cloud from Mordor wasn't completely over the sun, and that was hope for Gondor. There was a whole logical process there that wasn't clear in the movie, whereas in the cartoon they show it, and the narrator Gandalf explains, you know, a cock crow. He basically quotes Tolkien there. So if you haven't watched the cartoon in a while, go watch the cartoon, because if you love the Battle of Pelennor Fields, they absolutely nail the Battle of Pelennor Fields exactly the way Tolkien did it. But yeah, you get those extended, those two scenes alone are worth the, you know, getting the extended version. I can't think, what else do they add in the extended version? Those are the two scenes that come to my mind.
I think there's some more stuff with the Pass of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get the skulls coming out of the walls. I don't think you get that in the short version, theatrical. I think in the theatrical version, he goes in there and he tells the king, you know, what say you? What say you? And it stops right there. And the next thing you see is them out there at the boats.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of infer that the king has agreed, the king of the dead. But in the extended version, you get the whole mountain of skulls, and then he comes out and says, you know, you have a deal, or whatever he says. I don't know. High fives him. I don't know, something. Whatever he does. Let me ask you this while we're talking about the dead. That's another thing I had a problem with in this movie. I really, really don't like the army of the, I do like Gimli's lines about him, where he says, you know, don't let him go too soon, lad. Good.
Very handy in a fight, these guys.
Yeah, very handy in a pinch. But they basically turn him into a giant weed eater.
Yes.
And I didn't like that, because you get the sense that they could have just shown up and won the war by themselves. I felt like they were too powerful. I felt like the only thing that keeps the dead from winning the war for Aragorn is that they come last. If they'd come first before Rohan, you wouldn't have even needed Rohan. Rohan would have showed up and there'd have been a bunch of dead orcs.
Well, but the other part in the book, there's actually a southern Gondorian city and fleet that's coming to rescue Minas Tirith, and the dead, I think, literally just helps them get those people there. Like, it helps clear out some pirates so those guys could come and land at Pelennor Fields.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it's supposed to be the Corsairs of Umbar, but it turns out to be Aragorn and his guys. Rangers and people, too, right?
That's the other part, is like, the, you know, in the movie version, it's just Elrond coming and he brings the sword.
Yeah.
Right? But in the book, it's also like his sons and a bunch of Aragorn's ranger friends come with him.
Yeah.
And the north, and they bring a banner and stuff. And so they, I think, travel with him.
And then you also get the Prince of Dol Amroth and some of the other Gondorian outliers that show up, too. So there's other stuff going on that's kind of... Yeah, I do like the extended version. I just wanted to mention that the dead kind of annoy me, and I'm glad they're dead and gone and not still haunting, because they were annoying. It just they were too powerful. I just felt like they were too powerful. You talked about your favorite scene. I'm trying to think. It's hard not to love the great scenes with Minas Tirith. Those sweeping scenes where the camera's diving down the city and the Nazgul are flying and the trebuchets are firing and the siege towers and everything. That's pretty amazing. I'm trying to think.
The scene at King Théoden's speech when the riders come up.
Yeah. He does a way better job than Aragorn does. Viggo Mortensen is just very soft-spoken, so he's not really the best guy to turn to for a rousing speech. But yeah, Théoden is fantastic. A red day and the sun rises and all that, and he clatters their swords, their spears, with his sword and everything. And Oh, man, that's awesome. I'm ready to go fight for Theoden right now. That was fantastic. I also really like the Grey Haven scene. I mean, that just the raw emotion in that was so powerful. They did a great job of kind of hiding the fact that Frodo was going right up until the last second. And then, you know, I want to say I may have this wrong, and people that have watched the extras more recently than 2004 can, or 3 or 4 can answer this, but it seems to me that they said that they didn't give those pages of the script to the Hobbit actors until right before the scene so that their emotion would be real and they were like tearing up and it was just genuinely crying and everything because they were the end of filming and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I want to say they messed up the film and had to film the whole thing over again. So they had to like recreate the emotion. Yeah. That's why you get paid the big bucks, dudes, because man, that would have had to have been tough, you know, to do that. Anything else? Favorite scenes, extended scenes?
Well, let's talk about the gigantic scenes that's not in the movie.
Okay.
And that is the end section where Saruman goes to the Shire.
Oh, the Scouring of the Shire. Yeah.
The Scouring of the Shire is this, you know, the movie would have been another 40 minutes longer.
Too many endings, Jack Nicholson said.
It would have been too many endings. And the other part is this, you know, you have to think about this as a trilogy as a whole, because for me, the movie peaks at, the whole trilogy peaks at Pelennor Fields.
Right.
And the after stuff with the ring and the Battle of the Black Gate is downhill from that.
Oh, much less the Houses of the Healing and...
Yeah, that's right. So...
Field,
you know,
of Cormallen.
So, but in the book, you have all that as peaks, and then they go back to the Shire, have to fight another battle to save the Shire against Saruman, and the hobbits, you know, Merry and Pippin kick a bunch of rear end and stuff. So that, you know, I guess I wasn't stunned they left it out, because the story made sense without it, and they had killed Saruman before that.
Yeah, not even on screen in the theatrical version.
That's right. So
just disappears.
You didn't know.
Yeah.
But I understood it as a choice for the writer and the director. But I still, you know, as somebody who likes the book so much, that was a, you know, that was a big chunk,
right,
that they left on the floor there, and they didn't even film it. So
no, it's like Bombadil. They didn't even go there, or the.
So I mean, that, to me, those are the two biggest chunks of the whole story that are not in it, Bombadil and the Scouring of the Shire.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, though, is like you say, it kind of keeps on going after Pelennor Fields. You got the Field of Cormallen and the Houses of Healing with Faramir and Eowyn getting together, which
yes.
I don't know if you get as much of that in the theatrical cut, but in the extended version, we kind of see their romance a little. I think in the theatrical cut, you just cut to them standing there holding hands or something. But in the extended version, you get a little more buildup of them meeting and talking to each other, and then eventually they're holding hands and they're together at the very end. And that's good. I like that. But talking about extending it, you know, Tolkien never knew when to quit. You know that there's another existing chapter after the end of Lord of the Rings that he ended up cutting out. There's a whole other chapter. I don't think it's finished. It's in one of Christopher Tolkien's, like, the history of the Lord of the Rings books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it starts with Sam and his family sitting around Bag End talking. And they're like, tell us a story about so-and-so, Father. And Sam starts talking about something. And then Christopher Tolkien comes in and says something like, at this point, my dad realized the story was probably over and he didn't need this. And he cut it out. He was just going to keep going. I mean, we're just going to have more chapters with Sam, you know, cooking dinner. It was just going to keep going.
Taters.
Yeah.
Taters.
Yeah. Well, that's why I thought it was cool that they end it with Sam saying, I'm back. Because, you know, the Hobbit was there and back again. And so the Lord of the Rings ends up being there and I'm back, you know. So that kind of a nice parallel. And it made sense that it ended with Sam, I thought, because we get the closure of his story. As, you know, we know that Merry and Pippin are indestructible, basically, but Sam is the survivor, you know. He's gone through the worst of it, which ultimately Frodo could not live with, and leaves, basically to go to heaven, essentially. Mm-hmm. Or, and or the United States, whichever, or Canada, whichever one it is, I don't know. whereas Sam stays there and is the survivor. He keeps being a hobbit. He keeps living in the hole in the ground. You know, I guess that's Bag End. Makes sense he would inherit it, right?
He did inherit it.
Lord knows he deserved it. He earned it. I just carried the former owner up a volcano. It, you know, no big deal. While it was erupting. That's just a day's work for a gardener, you know, in the Shire. You know, chop some onions, plant some grass, carry somebody up an erupting volcano, be bowed down to by every lord in Gondor, and then come back home, you know, and they got a pumpkin they're excited about. So any other favorite scenes? I do like when they come back and they're all dressed up fancy and everybody's excited about the pumpkin. That's just so classic.
Yes. No, that scene is really well done. Like, nobody, I mean, Frodo is there and nobody has any idea who he is or what he did. And they're all excited because this guy grew a big pumpkin.
That's so Hobbit.
And that is the most Hobbit thing ever. But also it makes them feel good because, like, yeah, this is normal.
Yeah.
And this is real world, and these people don't need to know what's out there.
You know, you're right. They don't – the four hobbits are perfectly happy. In other words, they're not going around saying, hey, you know what we did? Which is obviously what I would be doing.
Yes.
They. I'm not sure I appreciate your definitiveness on that. No, I mean – They, I think that you're right. I hadn't thought about it the way you put it just now, but I think you're right in that they are more comfortable with the fact that the hobbits don't know and don't care, because that means they've gone back to the Shire as they know it. I mean, you know, there's a possibility if the hobbits did know, the hobbits might change and be all sitting around nervous and scared and start building fortresses and stuff, thinking the outside world's coming to get them if they really, you know, realize if they knew what a bullet they dodged.
Yes.
Then they, you know, it might have changed them. So they're better off that they're living in ignorance. That's the way they like it. The hobbits like it that way. They like it good and ignorant. So, all right, let me take a quick break here and point out we have to thank our patrons that keep our shows on the air. And we are having a slight change coming up. I've mentioned this a couple of times now on our different shows, but starting probably the middle, late summer, we're going to have the Avengers Assemble show will go away from its own feed and will become part of the White Rocket Entertainment feed. And the White Rocket Entertainment feed is going to have a lot more shows. You're getting a little taste of that already. We've had like four new shows this week. So we're going to keep cranking out the shows, cranking out the videos on the Patreon page and on the YouTube channel. And if you don't know there's a YouTube channel, just go on YouTube and search White Rocket TV. That's where I've been posting the videos that I do for the Patreon page. And then after they've been on there a couple of weeks, they go up on YouTube. So you can see them where I've been talking about all kinds of stuff. It's pretty much solo I go on there. And then the podcasts are either Jared or me and Jared or John and me or whoever. The only White Rocket show that's going to stay separate from the White Rocket Entertainment feed will, of course, be the AU Wishbone because it's, you know, humongous and has its own giant crowd. So we'll keep it separate. But I do want to thank our patrons, especially, as always, Nicholas Cottrell. And then, of course, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrecht, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, and Joey Miller. You guys, we really appreciate it every single time we do a show. Little note about upcoming stuff. We've had, like I said, several new shows out. We did John and I, along with Bobby Nash, did a show about Bosch and the Lincoln Lawyer with Michael Connelly's books and TV shows and movies. That one's in the feed now, probably just before this one, a couple of spaces. I did a show about Space 1999 Breakaway that's up there. Jared did a new comics with normies where he talks comics with somebody who knows nothing about comics. It's a lot of fun. And we've got more shows coming up. And the other thing I wanted to mention is upcoming conventions. For people that listen to this show, they're going to want to know stuff like this. My last three conventions for 2017, I'll be at LibertyCon in Chattanooga at the end of June, beginning of July. It's a great convention, and I hope to see you there. I got my schedule out late last night, actually. I'm going to be doing a panel on space opera, and I'll do a reading and a book signing. Very excited. And a show on podcasting, a panel on podcasting. That'll be fun. And then, of course, DragonCon is on Labor Day weekend in Atlanta. It's an intimate gathering of about 85,000 of our closest geek friends. I'll be doing a lot of stuff there, and then Archon in St. Louis in October. So I hope to see you guys there. And one of these days, I'm hoping that John and Ethan will come on down and show up at DragonCon. You think there's a chance that one day we'll see you there?
Eventually, yes. I look forward to it.
Excellent. Excellent. I know he'd have a great time there. I have no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. In our last half or third of our show here, we've talked a little bit about us already, so we'll probably zip on along through the rest. But in fact, I think we have touched on most of this. The book is deceptively long, deceptively short. You know, in fact, it when you look at the three books, it looks like Two Towers is the shortest, but it's not. Return of the King is the shortest, which is funny since it's the longest movie by far. Because Fellowship of the Ring is pretty thick, Two Towers is a little bit thinner, but a lot of Return of the King is actually the appendices.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cut that part out, it's the shortest one, which is really Book 5 and Book 6.
I did not realize that. I knew it had the appendices in it, but I didn't know by book count, by page count, it was the shortest.
Oh, yeah, man. If you take out Return of the King and you find the first page of the appendices and stick your finger in there and look at it, it's shorter than Two Towers. By ways. But it is a great book. And it's got that – oh, here's another great scene that I can't believe we didn't mention. We got to mention, which is the lighting of the beacons.
Yes.
That's the – in fact, I'll probably be playing that, but let me see if I can There it is. I found it. I'll have to cut some of that out, I guess. Bum, bum, bum. That's some of the best music in the trilogy right there.
It really is.
So, that's a great scene. And, I have a question about it, though. Go ahead.
Well, I got two other scenes I want to talk about, but you ask your question.
Here's my question about that scene. If Denethor is so determined not to summon help from Rohan that they have to sneak to light the beacons, and Denethor is obviously angry when he sees them lit, then later he complains that Theoden has betrayed him and not come when he called him. What the heck?
He's not sane.
Is that it? Is that the whole...
Yes, that's the explanation.
That's the extent.
The guy also tries to light himself on fire.
Well, I can't argue with that. That just struck me as one of those things where... It's like either you wanted him called or you didn't, but you can't have it both ways. And there's no character in the entire movie trilogy that annoys me more than Denethor.
Now we need to talk about the scene where he makes him sing while his son rides off to attack Osgiliath.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Denethor is a pain in the butt. Throughout the entire movie, he's consistent in the book, but I feel like in the movie they pick and chose parts for him to do, and it comes across as just completely erratic. Not in a consistently insane way, but just in an erratic and inconsistent way.
I thought he was very proud and prickly.
Yeah.
And sensitive about that. You know, and I think he was grieving for Boromir, and also kind of crazy before that happened. But I think the cinematography of the scene where he sings a song and Denethor is eating the food while Faramir charges Osgiliath, I just think the cinematography of that is really well done.
And he bites in a little tomato and the bread comes out, the blood.
Yeah, I mean, that part is really good.
While Pippin looks as uncomfortable as I've ever seen him. That's like everything Pippin has ever done to annoy people comes back to revisit him in one moment. You know, he looks about as uncomfortable as he's made everybody else throughout the entire trilogy. You actually feel kind of bad for him there. Osgiliath, it never makes sense throughout either of the movies that it's in, and it's annoying also. I don't know. I just a lot with Faramir and Denethor annoys me just because it just seems it's not consistent in the script. That's the weak. To me, that's the weakest. That's the weakest part of the movies. But anyway.
I mean, there's a lot of extra Osgiliath stuff that to me could have been cut, but they try to use it to illustrate when they're coming, and they don't just show up outside the city, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, one of the other things that's different is in the movie, Frodo sends Sam away.
Yeah.
And in the books, Frodo does not send Sam away.
Right.
They get separated, but it's not because Frodo said go home or whatever.
Yeah, it gave Sam a chance to find the little wrappings, you know, the leaf wrappings and the crumbs and stuff. And that, again, this is one of those many things that PJ and Philippa Boyens and Fran Walsh do with the script where they're making a contemporary movie. They're not directly adapting The Lord of the Rings. I mean, to be honest, considering what they end up actually doing, which is making a contemporary movie, it's actually remarkable just how much of the books they do include. But that being said, they take a lot of liberties. And the stuff that they were going to do and didn't do in these movies is even more horrifying. Like, they were going to have Arwen be with the Fellowship all the way through Moria.
Ugh.
Yeah. And they were going to have Aragorn actually physically fight Saruman outside the Black Gate at the end.
Mm.
I mean, the whole idea is that he doesn't have a physical body. So how do you give him a physical body and have him fight Aragorn? I mean, again, I understand. In terms of everything that Jackson is doing is trying to bring things full circle. He sets things up, and then he wants to pay him off later. So at the very, very beginning of the movie trilogy, you see Sauron outside the, Barad-dûr in his armor fighting Isildur and Isildur's father. So it makes sense that you'd come full circle at the end and have Aragorn with the same sword being the famous heir of Isildur, proving that while he has the same blood flowing in his veins, as he said, the same weakness, he can overcome it where his forefather couldn't, and he fights Sauron and can win. Except that that's great for a contemporary movie that has no connection to the books, but when you try to make it Lord of the Rings, it completely ruins the entire story. I would have gotten up and walked out of the theater. That would have taken everything the first two movies did and the rest of the third movie did and just thrown them all in the toilet.
Well, but it's also like they have to destroy the ring.
Right.
The sword fight doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. They actually filmed the big Samoan guy or the big Polynesian guy that was the orc in the first movie. They filmed him in CGI as Sauron, and then they ended up, for the extended version, changing it to a troll. So when you see in the extended version Aragorn fighting a troll outside the Black Gate, that was going to be Sauron. And you're just like, oh my gosh, another bullet we dodged, another arrow that we dodged, you know. Thank goodness they changed that. But I did love how they did the Dark Tower, Barad-dûr collapsing, and the eye kind of flickering around like, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on? And then it goes boop, it pops like Sauron did at the beginning of the first movie. Again, there's so much full circle. You know, he brings everything back around in it very effectively. There was something else in that scene that I was trying to think. They filmed the mouth of Sauron, and then they ended up deciding he was the gyro captain from Road Warrior, the Mel Gibson Road Warrior, Mad Max. And they decided he didn't look scary enough, so they went back and CGI'd a gigantic mouth on him, so he literally is the mouth of Sauron. And then they ended up saying, "Ah, screw it," and they cut that out of the theatrical version. So there's another thing they added into the extended is the mouth of Sauron. He's not in the theatrical when he comes out at the end with the male, the Mithril.
He's weird looking.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they did that again because they just thought he didn't look weird enough to be Sauron's right hand, you know, basically his Goebbels. Right? He's the media guy.
Sure.
He's Baghdad Bob of Mordor.
Out here to read the press release to you.
Yeah, exactly. There is no Gondorian military presence in Mordor. This is a fantasy. Oh, Iraq jokes. Yay. Okay. Let's see. Did we have anything? We talked about the past of the dead. Talked about Frodo and Sam away. What about the movies have we not mentioned that made the movies better or even rival the books or even in some ways, dare we say, better than the books? Anything?
I mean, I just think like like you said, the scenery of Minas Tirith, the kind of the zoom over shots when the Nazgul were attacking.
Yeah.
I think that was incredibly well done. And then also I think the some of the Battle of Pelennor Field stuff, the Theoden speech, is not in the books like that. And the charge of the Rohirrim with the music and stuff is just awesome.
It really is.
It's blood stirring.
Yeah. I also want to mention that this movie won 11 Oscars. The first one, I think, won 3. It was nominated for like 7, but it won 3 more technical type awards. The Two Towers didn't win anything, which I would more or less agree with. And then Return of the King, they just saved it all up for that one, and it was nominated for 11. It won every award. It tied Ben-Hur and Titanic by winning 11 and winning everything it could possibly win. And that was in a year where there were some other good movies, and I think I'm going to do the clip somewhere in here.
These then are the nominees for Best Motion Picture. The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, Barry M. Osborne, Peter Jackson, and Fran Walsh, producers. It's a clean sweep. The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, Barry M. Osborne, Peter Jackson, and Fran Walsh, producers.
This is the 11th Academy Award win tonight for The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, tying the record for most wins with the films Titanic and Ben-Hur.
So Return of the King won 11 Oscars, and it went up against Master and Commander, for one thing, which is another one of my top five movies. So that was an incredible year. 2003 had two of my five favorite movies of all time, and I hated seeing Master and Commander have to come out in the year of Return of the King and get steamrolled like everything else, because Master and Commander is a great, great movie based on a fantastic series of books. So let me see. You want to go ahead and do our second set of trivia, and then if we think of anything else, we can add it at the end?
Let's do it.
All right, let me pull out my second card. I'm looking for the really hard ones here. Hard one. Ah, okay. I have no idea. I just pulled one out randomly again. So it's my turn to ask you first, right?
Sure.
All right, here we go. It's kind of dark down here in my lair. Number one. What two people does Frodo willingly offer the ring to because he thinks them wise? I like that. It's not hard, but I like it. It's a good question. Number two, what facial wound is Grima still nursing when Saruman's army leaves for Helm's Deep? That's weird. What facial wound is Grima still nursing when Saruman's army leaves for Helm's Deep? Number three, what broken object washed up on a riverbank confirming Boromir's death to his brother? Number four, what, quote, moved in the dark, unquote, according to Balin's journal? Oh, that's weird. What, quote, moved in the dark, unquote, according to Balin's journal? Number five, how many fellowship members are killed by the Uruk-hai? And finally, how many frames per second were shot to give, wow, Gotta love these kind of questions. How many frames per second were shot to give Galadriel's temptation an otherworldly feel? 24, 48, or 56? All right, so there's...
Okay.
All right. Now, what you got for me?
All righty. Who surprises Strider in the woods as he forages for healing herbs for Frodo?
Okay.
So, all right.
Got it.
Who does Gandalf say he has heard the rumor that Aragorn is the living heir of Numenor?
Okay.
All right. How many Fellowship boats go further downstream than Lake Ninhitoel?
Okay.
All right. What town does Sam become mayor of?
Okay.
All right. Then what people slaughter the captors of Merry and Pippin?
Okay.
All right.
All right.
And the last question is,
yeah,
what's the first word Sam says after the Two Towers title appears on the screen?
Well, the Two Towers title appears on the screen in two different locations, depending on which version. Oh, no.
All right. So you ask me again, and I'll try and answer.
That's hard. Okay, here we go. Number one. What two people does Frodo willingly offer the ring to because he thinks them wise?
Galadriel is one.
Yes. Instead of a... whatever, you would have a... instead of a Dark Lord, you'd have a queen.
Yeah, you'd have a Dark Lady.
You have a queen. Strong as the foundations of the earth. All will love me and despair.
Yeah, all right, Gandalf?
Yes.
But he kind of holds it out to Aragorn, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. That's true.
Right.
He holds it out. I've said this in the first show. He holds it out to everybody except Boromir, which is why Boromir gets mad and wants to take it. The only one that actually wanted it, he doesn't offer it to. He offers it to everybody else. I think a dog came through at one point, and Frodo's like, hey, you want this? And the dog's like, nah.
The dog looked wise.
Yeah, and yet Boromir's like, dang it! Number two, what facial wound is Grima still nursing when Saruman's army leaves for Helm's Deep?
I don't remember him getting a black eye.
It is a cut lip. That's news to me.
Okay.
And I just watched it like a week ago again. All right, let's see. Number three, what broken object washed up on a riverbank this is one of those phrase weird. What broken object washed up on a riverbank confirms Boromir's death to his brother?
His horn.
Yeah. That is correct. Number four, what moved in the dark according to Balin's journal? I didn't know that was his journal. I thought it was a gigantic... like tome or something, but okay.
Orcs.
A shadow. I guess that's...
See, I was going to say orcs or Balrog, but...
Yeah, I guess that's... Yeah, whatever. Number five. How many Fellowship members are killed by the Uruk-hai?
One.
One. Yeah, I'm like, what?
I was going to say nine, just to be a smart one.
I know. I'm thinking either it's one or something's going on here that they're missing. You know, they're interpreting it differently. All right. And your last one, how many frames per second were shot? At least they give you a multiple choice. How many frames per second were shot to give Galadriel's temptation an otherworldly feel? 24, 48, or 56? Roll the dice.
56.
48.
All right. There we go.
So you end today's episode with seven. I have three, so it is within striking range. Let's see what happens.
All right, here we go. Who surprises Strider in the woods as he forages for healing herbs for Frodo?
What is this? A ranger caught off his guard? Yeah, that would be Arwen, Evenstar.
You're correct.
All right.
Who does Gandalf say has heard the rumor that Aragorn is the living heir of Numenor?
I don't know for sure, but that just has to be Denethor.
No.
What?
Sauron.
Okay. Well, you know, at one point, Denethor says something like, I will never allow a ranger to take the throne of Gondor. It's given to me. So, all right, fine, whatever.
How many Fellowship boats go further downstream than Lake Ninhithol?
Well, if that's the lake that we've... The famous lake from the last set of questions, there's only... there's only one that goes below the lake, and that's because it's got a dead body in it.
You are correct.
Hey! All right. So it's 7-5.
All right. What town does Sam become mayor of?
Minas Tirith. No, I'm just kidding. hey, by the way, do you know, I wish they'd mentioned this in the, I guess, did they mention the movie? I don't think they do in the extended version. Where do Legolas and Gimli end up going after the War of the Ring?
Do you know? They don't mention it.
But do you know?
I don't remember.
They go back to Helm's Deep because there's all kinds of amazing crystal stuff inside the caverns
that's right.
There.
And explore the caves.
Yeah, Legolas promises to go digging in caves with Gimli if Gimli will go like back to the woods with him or something. And so they trade off because they've become like, you know, best buds now. What is it they say in Mallrats and all? He'd become hetero life mates. Okay, what's the next one?
What did you answer the town?
Oh, Hobbiton.
Yeah, okay.
I'm gonna say if it's not the Shire, it's gotta be the Hobbiton because the Shire is like an area. Alright, 7-6, man.
What people slaughter the captives of Merry and Pippin?
The Riders of Rohan. Aomer's.
You are correct.
Aomer's army, yeah. We're tied. Holy cow.
Alright, what's the first word Sam says after the Two Towers title appears on the screen?
And it's gonna end in a tie.
It's one word.
I'm thinking that that's when they're climbing down the cliff on the elven rope. But see, in the theatrical version, they didn't even have that scene. I can't even remember what the beginning of the Two Towers is in the theatrical version because I only saw it in the theater like twice, and I've never seen it again. I've watched the extended version. So
it's immediately after the Fellowship, the start of the Two Towers.
Frodo?
No.
Okay.
But Mordor, because they're lost in the hills, and he says Mordor, the one place we want to get to, we can't seem to get any closer to.
Was that the last question?
That was the last question.
Wow, 2 weeks in a row, John. We ended in a tie.
That was good.
You won overall by an aggregate of... We both got 7 this time. We both got 9 last time. And we both got... you got 10 the first time. I got 8. So you win by an aggregate of +2. Congratulations. That was pretty darn fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. The questions got progressively harder each episode that we did, basically. Okay, so any last thoughts as we wrap up tonight's Return of the King Palooza?
Now, I think we probably encourage the people to go see the animated version now.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's really good. I kind of want to see the Bakshi version again, and I kind of don't because I remember it was bad. Have you seen
it? It was weird. It was the kind of thing I think you're supposed to watch when you're doing drugs.
Yeah.
I'm not being sarcastic.
No. Watch it and Pink Floyd's The Wall, you know, and you're good, I think. It's from that same era, like the late 70s, you know, early 80s, just very psychedelic weird. But yeah, I think we definitely need to say that we totally endorse the extended versions over the theatrical versions. And I think we both probably agree that Peter Jackson didn't get everything maybe the way we would have wanted it from the books, but it's an absolute miracle from heaven that they're even as close as they are, don't you think?
Oh yeah, no, you can't complain.
Yeah. Well, I know people do.
I know a bunch of people do. I get all that, blah, blah, blah. But it's, you know, this is people again. You and I are older, and so we understand there was a time before these movies, before the Marvel movies, before other stuff, when there was a barren landscape of this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And it was like manna from heaven when these movies came out. So,
you know that I didn't mention this either. Here's a last little tidbit. In addition to Bakshi doing the animated version and Rankin Bass, John Boorman wanted to do Lord of the Rings, and he was all set to film it back in the early 80s. And then he realized how much it was going to cost. And you know what movie he did instead? I mean, he had like the armor, the swords, the horses, everything was ready to go. And he realized how much it was going to cost, and he threw the script away and did a completely different movie with the same stuff. And you know what that movie was?
What?
Excalibur. King Arthur was a lot less expensive to do than Lord of the Rings. And can't you see, is it Nicole Williamson, whatever, that was Merlin? Can't you see him as Gandalf? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He would have been fun as Gandalf. And I could see the guy that played King Arthur being Aragorn.
The dragon awakes.
Show me the dragon. God, he was awesome. I love that guy. He was so good in that. I thought that in Babylon 5 and Crusade, I thought that Peter Woodward did a great job of channeling his Nicole Williams. I think it is. Because he does that whole Merlin thing where you drag out your syllables like that. Show me the dragon. I thought if you look at the cast of Excalibur, you can see some of the cast of Lord of the Rings as you might have seen it, and it totally makes sense. So I'm glad they didn't, though, because we got both, you know, and I love Excalibur. It's a fantastic movie, but it would have been interesting if that had been Lord of the Rings. I feel like there was another one along the line somewhere. I also liked when they did the Oscar ceremony, when Return of the King won Best Picture, the camera flashes to Sean Connery in the audience. Because you know the story about Sean Connery in these movies?
Who is he supposed to be?
Gandalf. Peter Jackson offered Gandalf to him first, and he said no. And so he went to Ian McKellen. And later they asked Sean Connery about it, and Sean Connery said, I just have terrible luck at predicting what's going to be successful. I mean, he did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and didn't do Lord of the Rings. So
there's a good decision.
Exactly. He just didn't understand it. He just didn't think it made any sense, and nobody would like it. He just didn't have a clue. So I think it worked out better, because I always, whenever I watch these movies, every once in a while in the movie, I'll be like trying to imagine Sean Connery in that role. And I'm just like, no, because Ian McKellen was so good.
Oh, he's perfect.
He's absolutely perfect. Yeah, fantastic. So, all right. Well, with that, I'm out of tidbits for tonight. So, John, thanks for doing this trilogy with me. I've had a blast. We've put together about 4.5 hours, about the same length as Return of the King, of coverage of these three movies, and I hope everybody out there has enjoyed it.
It's fun. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Well, I guess the Rocket's going to get out of here for another week, and we'll be back with our more usual topics coming up in the next episode. Otherwise, we'll see you guys down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.